Madison Reed is revolutionizing the way women color their hair with gorgeous, salon-quality, multidimensional hair color made from ingredients you can feel good about with no harsh odor. Hundreds of thousands of women have discovered this new way to color, delivered to your door on your schedule for under $25. Find your perfect shade at madison-reed.com. Madison Reed would like to honor True Crime Garage listeners with 10% off plus free shipping on their first color kit with promo code TCG. That's promo code TCG. Check out madison-reed.com today. Madison Reed, treat yourself.
The future is coming. Make it brighter with Squarespace. Squarespace makes it easy to turn your idea into a unique website. You can showcase your work, blog, or publish content. Even sell products and services of all kinds in just a few clicks. You can customize everything from look and feel to settings and products using beautiful templates created by world-class designers. I love that it looks great, it's easy to use, and if you have questions, they have award-winning customer service that is available 24/7. Head to squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you are ready to launch, use offer code GARAGE to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com. Welcome to True Crime Garage. Wherever you are, whatever you are doing, thanks for listening. I'm your host, Nick, and with me, as always, is the man that chased the snakes out of Ireland. He is the captain.
Thank you. It's good to be seen, and it's good to see you. Thanks for listening, and thanks for telling a friend.
Tonight, we are drinking Keefe's Irish Stout by the great people at Granite Brewery in fantastic Toronto, garage grade 4 out of 5 bottle caps. If you can get your hands on this, make sure you do so, because this is a rich, malty stout with roasted chocolate and coffee notes ending in a dry finish. And Keefe's Irish Stout was brought to us by, first, a big thank you to Megan down in beautiful Grapevine, Texas.
Big shout out to Lauren in Rockville, Maryland.
And thank you to Margaret in Dooned Inn down in sunny Florida.
And a big we like your jib to Paige in Cornish, New Hampshire.
Let's give a shout out to Morgan in Pataskala, Ohio. Also, a long-distance cheers to Jill in South St. Paul, Minnesota. And last but not least, Captain, a big thank you to Gareth in the forever mysterious Parts Unknown.
Yeah, and if you'd like to be a member of Parts Unknown, you can do so by going to our website, click on the store page, and pick up one of those Parts Unknown t-shirts.
And thanks to everybody out there for helping us to fill up the fridge for this week. That's enough of the business, Captain. Everybody gather around.
Grab a chair.
Grab a beer. Let's talk some true crime.
The update was expectedly grim, as investigators continue to scour the grounds of a Toronto home where a suspected serial killer stored his tools. The exhausted detective in charge stopped by. This is a 24-hour operation, and a horrific one.
We believe there are more victims on top of those 5, and as we identify those victims, I can't give you any idea about a number, but I do expect more charges to be laid.
The ominous prediction comes after police seized more than a dozen planters from homes that hired Bruce MacArthur as a landscaper.
We're not just grabbing every planter we see. If there's an indication from the canine units that there's some decomposition around that planter, we'll grab it.
The implication is chilling, considering police have found the remains of at least three people in just two planters they've examined. At the same home those were taken from, the plan now to warm up the frozen ground with heaters and start digging. He's retired now, but for 14 years, Kevin Bryan was a forensic investigator. He says the scope of the MacArthur investigation is staggering and will be tedious. Only certain parts of the remains will reveal key information.
Typically, the skull, ribs can give you, if there's broken ribs or if there's ribs with cut marks in them, that can indicate a cause of death.
Grisly details. Peter's Gromo follows them all with the horror of someone who might have ended up a victim too. Gromo knew MacArthur for years when they met up in Toronto last spring. He says they had drinks at this bar. Then MacArthur offered him a lift to his hotel. A friendly encounter turned intimate, then suddenly violent.
He really grabbed my neck, violently twisted it right to his crotch, and his pants were undone. And that's when I really was quite disturbed.
Gromo managed to get away and never saw MacArthur again.
I have an 18 and a half inch neck. My neck is big. And for him to grab my neck with one hand, twist it like that, I literally thought one more second he would have snapped and broken my neck and I was a dead man.
Gromo says he had no idea, but some of MacArthur's dating profiles suggest he was into violent sex. Today, a man posted how MacArthur pursued him on a gay chat app last fall. In online messages, he says when MacArthur told him he was into asphyxiation too, he got scared and blocked him. Experts say violent sexual fantasies are common among serial killers.
They rehearse in their head for many years, and then eventually they begin to sort of experiment and flirt with the idea of actually acting them out.
If they know, police aren't saying how the five men MacArthur is accused of killing died. Only that it's a matter of when, not if, they'll find more. Joanna Romaliotis, CBC News, Toronto.
There are more than 30 properties being scrutinized by police. This investigation is big and it's getting bigger. Dozens of tips continue to come in, and the search for remains and other evidence has already expanded well beyond Toronto to properties in Peel, York, and Durham regions.
All right, well, we kind of left you hanging yesterday, everybody, and we that's the magic of the garage, right, Captain? We can do whatever we want. No, but we ran out of time there.
Sounded there was so sinister.
Smug, even. There was a lot to talk about in that little three-minute news clip that we left you with yesterday. And the thing here is, regarding Bruce MacArthur and what's come down the pipeline as of late, you need to understand this is about as new of a case as you can get. This is like breaking news for the garage here, because we have a man that's arrested late January. Here we are, the beginning of March, trying to figure out what happened here and how this thing's going to go down once it gets to court.
Well, and because there's so much information coming out from this, we're getting a lot of emails and a lot of people on social media saying, hey, look into this or cover this case. Then you have to, it's the balance of, can you cover this case? Is there enough to talk about?
Yeah. Well, the interesting thing too, Captain, is that this kind of came on to our radar middle to late of last year when we started getting emails from our good listeners that are saying, hey, there's something going on here in Toronto. There's all these missing men.
Right.
And at the time, you have these two different task force, and we don't know that anything's connected. It wasn't until the breaking news in January that they had tied a lot of these cases together. And, oh, the big thing here is that they all share the same suspect. So let's talk about that news clip a little bit here, Captain. So what does that tell us? That tells me some very, very scary stuff at the very beginning of that news clip, is where the man states that police saw a man go up to the apartment with Bruce MacArthur, up to Bruce's place, and then they decide to kick in the door. And when they get into the apartment, they find that this man that went willingly into Bruce MacArthur's apartment, that he's chained up to the bed.
Yeah.
So what does that tell us? So we know at that time that for some reason in September of 2017, Bruce MacArthur became, he came onto their radar, onto police's radar.
Mm-hmm.
They go to this auto parts, this auto body, auto parts, sounds more like a salvage yard type thing to me, but he sells them. Bruce sold these people his vehicle, this
his creeper
Dodge,
van, yeah,
this Dodge Caravan. The rumor that I keep hearing the most is that there might have been dried blood in the back of the van.
Yeah, my thought on this was when they're looking into Bruce or even this van, is at some point they probably took cadaver dogs and had them sniff around. And I'm guessing that they got hits from these dogs, and that's why they took this van over.
I would be willing to wager that you're probably... Exactly right. Because here's what my thoughts are, Captain, is that there was something in that van, something inner on that van, mm-hmm. that was enough for police. We talked about gut feelings as well. There was enough for police with their expertise and their years involved in sleuthing and in homicide investigations where these guys felt that this guy, this Bruce MacArthur guy, this guy that sold this van, he's guilty of probably murder. There's a chance he's linked to more than one of these disappearances of these men. So we have enough evidence to stay on this investigation.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have enough evidence to wrap him up, to arrest him and send this thing to court. So what do we have to do here? This guy is potentially very, very dangerous.
Yeah.
We need to follow this guy. Maybe here's what I wonder too. You're following the guy probably for a multitude of reasons.
Right.
But one is, if you think that he might be linked to more than one disappearance, are you following him with the simple fact that, well, let's see where he goes, because we have no bodies.
Mm-hmm.
We have all these guys that have disappeared. We have no bodies. We don't even know where to start looking for bodies yet.
Right. Because possibly there's a dumping ground somewhere. And I think the other possibility, too, is that, you know, he has a violent past. He pled guilty to attacking a man with a lead pipe. And so if you think that two of them are connected and possibly more than two,
mm-hmm.
and then you start looking in the database of all the men that are roughly 40 to 60 years old that have gone missing in the gay village of Toronto, then you start going, well, there could be more than five, right? Yeah. And then you start going, well, this is a possible serial killer, and if so, you want to stop him from having another victim. And could you imagine the horror that you're tracking this individual, and he has a gentleman with him, and they're going to go into their Bruce's apartment, and for all you know, that's his dungeon.
Well, that's the scary thing, Captain, because you know what happens during that situation is I wouldn't imagine that you have the top cops. You know, you don't have the super detective out following around Bruce MacArthur. That's kind of a tedious task that you give to some...
The rookie.
That's right. So you got these guys out following Bruce MacArthur around. There is a phone call. There's a cell phone call made at that time that says, you know what? Look, boss, I understand that we have an active investigation here.
Mm-hmm.
I understand that our number one priority is to follow this dude around and see what he's up to. However, I have to tell you, a guy that could potentially fit this dude's victimology just went into his apartment. What do we do, boss? Because you run the risk of completely sabotaging your investigation here. Or you also run the risk of your job is to protect the public, protect and serve. You could be sending a guy to his death sentence.
Yeah.
To Bruce MacArthur's apartment.
And then that's on your hands as a department. And I'm sure that the chief or whoever says, hey, you got to go in. Because if it gets out that they're following this individual and he basically murders somebody underneath your nose, now you're going to catch him for that crime. You're going to lock him away for that. But you got to get him on these other crimes as well.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also going to come out to the public that you were watching him and basically he murdered somebody and you knew it.
Right.
You knew
under your watchful eye, this guy was killed. Now, the thing here is what they do ultimately do decide to do is break down the door. They go in and they find this man chained to the bed. Right. Now, okay, now there's a lot of people out there going to go, okay, well, he went into the apartment willingly.
Yes.
And he could have been involved in a consensual act.
Right. George Costanza.
So what we're talking about here, though, is there are some wording within these news reports where we find out very quickly after them going into Bruce's apartment that they start to search Bruce's apartment. They start to search areas and locations that are tied to Bruce MacArthur.
Well, and a lot of homes are going to be tied to him because he does work at a lot of homes.
Yeah, and I want to be clear here because we are making some assumptions in today's show, and we have to because this is such new information that once the police make their arrest and they announce to the public that we've made an arrest, mm-hmm. guess what? You're not going to get much information after that because we need this stuff for trial.
Right.
So we have to make some assumptions here to kind of tie this story together to tell it completely. And that being my suspicion is that when they kicked in that door and they found that gentleman chained to the bed,
yeah,
there's a good chance that he told police, look, yeah, I came in here willingly.
Uh-huh.
At some point, this guy's doing something against my wishes without my consent.
Well, he could have pulled. I mean, there's so many weird things here that Bruce is, to me, like, it just reminds me of a lot of things. One, the lead pipe, you know, attacking an individual out of nowhere with a lead pipe.
Mm-hmm.
And then having that attack where he apologized for it. That is something that happened with Gacy.
Yeah.
And then you got this situation where you have an individual that goes into your house willingly, but now you get him handcuffed. Reminds me of Gacy as well.
Mm-hmm.
The old old handcuff trick. And so was he tricked? And then also, you know, preying on the gay community, bathhouses and bars, that's very Dahmer-like to me.
Yeah. And when you hear that this guy is charged with a couple counts of murder, you start to wonder, okay, well, if he did do this, and you know me, I like to call him out on the show, he's looking very guilty even early on in this, even with the assumptions that we have to make. He's looking to be very guilty here.
Well, maybe you can clear this up for me. The guy that they found handcuffed to the bed, does he come out and state, I didn't want to be handcuffed?
I don't know that. I'm making a complete assumption there. Here's what I'm guessing. Because they found some
people are into that.
Right. Of course. Of course.
You just say it like that. Okay.
Anyway, mm-hmm. The thing here is, though, my assumption is that this guy felt threatened or concerned for his life or well-being at some point,
yeah,
and was probably thankful that the cops had kicked in the door. And the reason why I say that is because I don't know exactly how the rules and the laws work up in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
But here, okay, if they would have kicked in the door, they can kick in the door on probable cause. But if that guy then says, look, I came in here willingly and we're two grown men, we're two adults doing adult things,
right,
nobody's in trouble here, Bruce MacArthur has every right to tell the police, get the hell out of my apartment.
Yeah, we're just doing a horizontal naked hug.
Yeah.
Adult hug.
Toes to feet. Wait, mm-hmm. Toes to face. Mm-hmm. What? No. Okay. Anyway, so the thing here is, though, Captain, unless the police have probable cause to search his apartments, mm-hmm. I think something happened. They witnessed something that they said, look, either we don't need Bruce MacArthur's consent, or this guy that was chained to the bed, he's a potential victim. He tells us something is not right is going down. Now we have probable cause to search Bruce MacArthur's apartment. The reason why I say that is because they must have found something. They must have found something in that apartment that led them from where they were before, where they were just surveilling him, to now we have enough that we are going to arrest this guy, charge him with two counts of first-degree murder, and yet we have no bodies.
Yeah.
They found something in that apartment.
And like you hear in the trailer earlier is the idea that if you don't have any bodies, it's really hard to convict somebody.
Mm-hmm.
But they feel like they have enough evidence of such.
Now, following Bruce's arrest. Yeah. We have other people coming out, and we have other sources, and in fact, that start coming out and telling stories about Bruce MacArthur. Now, one story is about an alleged sexual assault. This is from as early back as 2016. Mm-hmm. So a police source, this is quote unquote, a police source told to, I think it was the Global News, but regardless, it was one of the news outlets, this story involving Bruce MacArthur. And it goes like this, that the source said that MacArthur had agreed to meet a man. Again, this is from sometime in 2016. That he had became acquainted with through an online dating app. The two agreed to meet for consensual sex at a secluded North York parking lot. Mm-hmm. During the date, the source told MacArthur allegedly, I'm sorry, the source said MacArthur allegedly started to choke him while the couple were in the back of MacArthur's red van. The man was able to fight MacArthur off and told MacArthur he was going to call police. MacArthur reportedly then drove to the 41 Division Police Station in Scarborough, where he told officers that he was going to be called, that they were going to be called about a sexual assault. And MacArthur's telling the officers, you know, this wasn't true. This is not going to be a true statement that you're about to receive from this person.
I mean,
this act was consensual.
Uh-huh.
And while this is all going down, we have the man who was allegedly choked. He did call the police like he said he would.
Good for him.
And he talked to officers at the 32 Division in Toronto's North End.
Mm-hmm.
So at some point, the source then said, told the news that MacArthur was placed under arrest and was taken to the 32 Division where he was investigated for this situation.
Mm-hmm.
The problem here, though, is whatever goes down, whatever MacArthur tells these officers, he's not arrested and he's not charged with anything.
And now that they have Bruce arrested and he's being charged with these murders of these missing men, we're going to have other people that were attacked, other men that were attacked by Bruce come forward and share their accounts of and how they survived an attack from this vicious guy.
Yes, let's listen to this man's story.
Mr. MacArthur he looked like Santa Claus. Like, even on his profile, his pic had a picture of him as the mall Santa. He didn't strike me as someone who was going to kill me. He struck me as someone who was trying to push my limits, but then it quickly turned to, this guy's not respecting my limits. You don't go into these things thinking it's going to be you. You hear about them happening to other people, but it still blows me away today that this occurred to me. This happened to me. I was just the lucky one. Like, that's all. It could happen to anyone. I first became aware of Bruce MacArthur. It has to go back probably over a couple years of just ad hoc kind of one-off messages on various apps. That day, it was a beautiful sunny day, clear sky. It was a daytime meeting. I was supposed to be there to meet him about 12 noon, I believe. I was running a little bit behind, but I was in correspondence on the app saying, I'm running behind, just hold on for 15 minutes. And I was getting my stuff together. And then I went to the designated meeting place, and that's when I got in his truck. When I got in the truck, I had a conversation with Mr. MacArthur about a serial killer being at large. When I said there was a serial killer, he didn't respond. It was just like the conversation kind of went into what he does for a living, which possibly could have been related, I guess, in hindsight. He did mention he had a roommate. He said it was just a roommate, that he was at work, and that it wouldn't be a problem. And so I took that at face value, and I went to put on the things that he asked me to put on, and he mixed me a drink. I was aware that there was GHB that was there. GHB is a drug that causes a euphoria, puts you at ease, and makes you comfortable, and a little bit heightens the sexual encounter. That's why I would take it. If you do, there's a fine line with GHB because it is the date rape drug. If you go over, if you know what you're doing, you can certainly knock someone unconscious very easily. He was going to mix the GHB up for me, but I gave him instructions if he was not to do more than 5 mils because that would make me go to sleep. That day, it was agreed that I would submit to his experience that had been indicated on his profiles. His big things, as I know them, were he liked to find submissives, find their buttons that he could push, find what their edge was, yes, and then push them over it. The fear that I started to feel uncomfortable that day for the first time was I couldn't breathe. I have memories of not being able to catch my breath throughout the beginning, early on. And that made me uncomfortable and put the first red flag up that I wanted to go home. Because he wasn't, I felt, respecting my limits. The shortness of breath was from specific acts he was doing to me. He was basically raping my throat. He was cutting off my airway. And I was physically to the point where I was just giving panic, and I was panicked. But in that type of play, there's some expectation of trying to find that area where it's close to the edge. But at that point, that's the only memory I have from it, is that just this overall, I couldn't breathe.
How was he cutting off your airway?
Like I said, like with his penis,
The best part of spring cleaning takeaway is the post-clean clarity you get. It's kind of like when you find out that you've been paying a fortune for wireless. When Mint Mobile has phone plans for $15 a month when you purchase a 3-month plan. It's time to switch to Mint Mobile. All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. Use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and bring your phone number along with all of your existing contacts. Ditch overpriced wireless with Mint Mobile's limited-time deal and get 3 months of premium wireless service for $15 a month. Save a lot of money with Mint Mobile. Get their great mobile wireless service delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. That's premium service at a great price. To get this new customer offer and your new 3-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/TCG. That's mintmobile.com/TCG. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/TCG. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first three-month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details. Everyone loves a good family mystery, especially one with as many twists and turns as June's Journey, a hidden object mystery game with a captivating detective story. It takes you back to the glamour of the 1920s with a diverse cast of characters. You'll step into the role of June Parker and search for hidden clues to uncover the mystery of her sister's murder. Use your observation skills to quickly uncover key pieces of information that lead to chapters of mystery, danger, and romance. And customize your very own luxurious estate island. Think expansive gardens and beautiful buildings. Collect scraps of information to fill your photo album and learn more about each character. And you can chat and play with or against other players by joining a detective club. Can you crack the case? Download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android. June needs your help, detective. Download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android.
His hands with his body weight sitting on my chest. When you play with someone in the proper environment, it's built on safe, sane, and consensual, and they're safe words. And he wasn't giving in to the indicators that I was not being able to catch my breath. And at this point, I'd started to sweat quite a bit, which for me would be an indicator that I was drugged I had a larger dose than what I would have noticed normally. When I started to feel uncomfortable, I think at that point, that might have been the point where it was too late for me to know what was happening to a degree, because I think I at that point I may have gone unconscious.
Support for today's show comes from Squarespace. Ready to start your new business? Make it stand out with Squarespace. With beautiful templates created by world-class designers, Squarespace makes it easy to turn your ideas into a new and unique website. Showcase your work, blog, or publish content. Even sell products and services of all kinds in just a few clicks. There's nothing to install, patch, or upgrade ever. Though if you do have a question, Squarespace's award-winning 24/7 customer service is there to help. Head to squarespace.com for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use the offer code GARAGE to save 10% off your first purchase of the website or domain. That's squarespace.com and use our promo code GARAGE. Destiny is calling and it says that you need a new website. Make it with Squarespace. Check out squarespace.com for your free trial and use our promo code GARAGE to get 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. Check out squarespace.com today. Today's episode of True Crime Garage is brought to you by the movie Unsane, a new psychological thriller coming to theaters this spring from Academy Award-winning director Steven Soderbergh. Unsane stars Golden Globe winner Claire Foy, who plays Sawyer Valentini, a recent victim of stalking who is trying to move on with her life.
She has changed her phone number, taken out a restraining order, and she has even relocated to a new city. But Sawyer can't shake the feeling that her stalker is still tracking her. After speaking to a therapist about her concerns, Sawyer is involuntarily committed to a mental institution, and she believes that her stalker has followed her there. But she is not sure what she can believe.
Has her biggest fear turned into reality, or is it all in her head? Rolling Stone raves, Unsane is electrifying. Prepared to be wild, and you're going to be pinned to your seat.
Check out the new psychological thriller, Unsane, in theaters March 23rd. Discover more by visiting unsane.movie.
Have you read the labels on the back of your skincare and makeup? Most people don't, but Juice Beauty wants to change that.
Your skin can absorb up to 60% of what you put on it. So what goes on your skin can be as important as what goes in your body. Juice Beauty is made with certified organic ingredients.
And their formulas use natural ingredients. They're certified organic ingredients, and they have been proven to work as good, if not better, than the conventional beauty products.
Juice Beauty is the organic solution. In fact, I use Juice Beauty Green Apple Peel Exfoliant, and I feel good using Juice Beauty because I'm trying to take care of my skin, not harm it.
And Juice Beauty has a bunch of products. They have anti-wrinkle creams, moisturizers, mascara, cleansers, sunscreen, makeup. They have tons of stuff. You need to check out JuiceBeauty.com today.
Go to JuiceBeauty.com/garage for exclusive savings on your first order when you use the code GARAGE20 at checkout. That's JuiceBeauty.com/garage, and make sure you use code GARAGE20 at checkout.
I know there has been evidence that has been suggested by the police that I was unconscious. And in that evidence, there is definite signs that I was in a position, bound and ready to be killed. I don't know how long I was unconscious. So, but there was, at that point, I could hear the roommate was home. And the roommate was, like I didn't hear him come in the front door and that sort of noise. So the roommate was well in the apartment for a period of time by the time I was aware of him. And I did say to Bruce, I said, "Oh, your roommate's home." And I was starting to use this as my way to like end this. And he said the words, "Not until I come first." I asked to go home. He said I had one more task to perform. And then I gathered my stuff. And I don't remember getting home that day. I don't remember how I left. When the police detective brought to my attention the fact that they had photographs of me, because she was asking if I saw cameras, and I didn't remember any cameras. But then when it was winding down, and I knew at this point there were photos of me, I asked her if, how do you know? I still wasn't ready to believe that I was that victim. And she said to me that I was bound. I was in pretty much, for lack of a better term, because I can't disclose everything, a kill position for him. And why it stopped, I don't have all the information the police have. All I can go on is what I think, and it's the roommate coming home, interrupting his, whatever his process is or his ritual. And thank God for me. It hadn't dawned on me till we got further along in the conversation how much danger I was in that day and how close I was to not coming back. And that is also something that haunts me, gives me nightmares. This occurred in the summer, about halfway through the summer, and the police contacted me the day after his arrest. The fact that they found me the next day leads me to believe that they were on top of it, and they knew who I was because to go from he's arrested and finding me took like less than 12 hours. I was with my partner and I was in the bedroom, and I had brought an article out without a picture of Bruce and said, oh, they caught the serial killer. And then a few minutes, maybe 15, 20 minutes later, he comes down to the bedroom with his tablet with full picture saying, this is the man that did it. And I went, oh my God. And then I told my partner that I'd been with him. When my partner brought in the picture and I said, oh my God, I've been with him, that is not unusual for us to have. We have an open relationship and it works quite well for us. The only thing that particular day, the rule that I broke was I didn't tell him where I was going. And that's something that's very hard for me today, because I would have, had it gone through, I would have just disappeared, and I would think of my partner being here. First of all, wondering why I wasn't home, because I was always home when he got home. And then getting probably pissed off that I haven't left a note or called, and then going to panic, and then the worst case, which to put him through that would have been hell. I am having some night terrors. I'm afraid of the dark. I've never been afraid of the dark. The fact that it happened in the daytime is quite ironic, but now I see things in the dark. I see shadows. My counselor told me it's to be expected. I've been through something traumatic, and I don't want to live in fear. I don't want to become an asexual person, because I'm afraid of going forward, and if he kills those personality traits in me, he's won for me. Like, he's got another, he's taking me yet further, and I'm not going to be that far of a victim. I've been a victim once of his, I'm not going to be a victim twice.
So that's a lot to unravel there.
Yeah, powerful stuff from that victim that decided to come forward and tell the media what had happened. Some interesting things inside that story, Captain. He says that the police had found a photo of him on Bruce MacArthur's computer.
Yeah.
To which he states that he never saw any cameras. He does not remember his photo being taken. So remember, he says he believes he blacked out or was choked out at some point.
Well, he was also drugged.
Mm-hmm. So,
I don't know if drugged is the right term, because he knew he was going to take these drugs.
Yeah, yeah. You know. A heavier dose than what he claims he had asked for. And so at some point, we can assume that these photos that were taken of this gentleman were after he was either blacked out or choked out by Bruce MacArthur.
Right.
He doesn't remember seeing cameras. He doesn't remember seeing any cameras set up or having his photo taken. And the police contact him within about 12 hours of them arresting Bruce MacArthur. The thing here that we learn from this, Captain, this very detailed account of this attack on this poor man, is that this gives us a lot of insights into Bruce MacArthur and what kind of monster this guy is. Yeah. And furthermore, his MO. Because, you know, I was wondering when we first took on this case, and mm-hmm. we hear that there was a potential romantic relationship between the potential offender and some of the victims. Yeah. You wondered if it was like a, I don't know, maybe something similar to a Jeffrey Dahmer situation, where when asked, you know, Dahmer had certainly had many crazy levels of perversions that was going on within him and his apartment.
Right.
However, when it boils down to it, sometimes Dahmer's saying, you know, I killed because I didn't want to be alone, because I didn't want this person to leave. I didn't want them to ever leave me. And the only way that I could guarantee that was for me to make them my victim, keep them there with me, and then ultimately consume them.
Right.
Now, what I mean by that is, when I hear of some types of romantic relationships between Bruce MacArthur and these victims, you wonder, was this some kind of in the heat of the moment attack, where it's a bad breakup, or he gets jealous and he attacks these people? No, what we see here is that we have a guy that has some high perversion levels, and these are sexual oriented killings that are going on. Some of them could be, when you're talking about, and the police won't come out and say this, you know, they won't tell us how these poor people have died and been killed. But we can assume from the stories that we're hearing from these different victims that had survived and come forward, we can assume that these are strangulations, asphyxiation. These are things along those lines. This is how these men were killed.
Yeah, I think it's almost like, you know, he would take his perversions a little too far, where like he's getting a willing partner to have a sexual experience with, and then he's taking whatever fantasy is in his head, because it's just like this survivor said. He said, well, I put on what he told me to put on. And so on some level, they're acting out this fantasy, but then Bruce is taking it too far. And I think as he's taking it too far, it's either that Bruce is losing control, or the fact that these individuals felt attacked, that maybe he felt like, okay, well, they feel like that's an attack, so now I have to kill them to cover up that attack. If that makes any sense.
I see where you're going with that, but what I think we have here is, I think we have a man that wanted to kill, that has a sexual perversion towards killing. That's right. Part of the sex act for him is the actual murder, the actual death of his victim.
Okay.
And the reason why I feel that way is I see an evolution, let's say, in this individual. Where this first attack that we hear about that occurred in 2001, this is more of like a caveman style attack, where, okay, I want a victim. I have some sexual perversions that I need to act out. And the only way I know to do this, to go about this, is I'm going to club this dude. And once he's knocked out, I'm going to be able to do what I want to him. He has elevated his killing game, let's say,
right,
by at some point he learned, you know what's easier, rather than having to trick someone and attack them, why don't they not find out about the trick until they're already handcuffed, until right. they're already tied up
or drugged.
Yes. So now what I can do is I can get on these different dating apps, or I can meet people and I can say, look, I'm into bondage.
Right.
I'm into these types of games. Are you willing to play? And the vibe that I get from some of these surviving victims that we hear is that it sounds like maybe that wasn't their thing so much as it was his thing, but they were willing to play along. You know, they were willing to play along to the point where at some point they're going, crap, this is no longer fun anymore. We are no longer having a good time. This guy tricked me. This guy put me in this situation, and now I've been tricked and I'm helpless, or I'm defenseless.
Yeah. And yeah, so he's raping these victims, but that's where I believe, or at least my gut feeling is saying, because he took that too far, that the murder is to cover up from that. I don't know if the murder is actually part of the sexual experience. You know, I'm not an expert at, but this is what my gut is telling me.
Well, there's another unique thing that we see Bruce MacArthur do twice, is on two occasions he's involved in attacking an individual, and the individual defends themselves to the point of telling him that they're going to contact the police. And Bruce MacArthur, he gets the upper hand by going to police first.
Yeah.
And That's a unique strategy there. And people will go, well, why the hell would he do that? Well, because he's hiding a lot of stuff. This guy would much rather drive right to the police department, walk in with his hands up and go, look, I'm guilty of this and you're going to find out about it very soon. The reason why he does this, he doesn't want them digging into his personal life too much.
Yeah, it's one thing to say that you assaulted somebody or even sexually assaulted somebody and you can fess up to those crimes and accept the punishment that you get from those crimes, easier crime to defend as well. And also, especially in this community, I mean, this is a community that I think a lot of times law enforcement kind of stays out of, you know, where there, if there was an attack in the heterosexual community of this nature, they would take them a little more serious. Now, I know that's very generalizing everything, but we see this time and time again.
Well, specifically regarding this case, we have the two incidences where I personally believe the victims didn't come forward or they weren't fully cooperative with law enforcement. And that's not to blame them for anything. They don't know what else Bruce MacArthur is out there doing.
Right.
But what I mean by that is law enforcement in its own way has their hands tied behind their backs if they have victims that won't cooperate with the investigation or testify against this individual. Now, the thing here is, too, that we have the computer that was found. Ultimately, to kind of sum up this story for you, Bruce MacArthur, once they decide that he's probably linked to the disappearance of several of these guys, they start finding body parts. They find body parts of individuals that have been dismembered, and they are in planters, these large planters. Remember, we said Bruce is a landscaper. He's an independent contractor or self-employed, whatever you want to call it, and he works for many different people. Well, some of these properties that he's worked for, he's distributing these body parts amongst these planters at different people's properties. Now, they were able to do many searches. This has been a concerted effort, a big-time effort to try to locate these missing men. And what they've ultimately found, I believe, I could be wrong, Captain, I believe Bruce MacArthur to this date, March 13th, has been charged with 7 counts of homicide.
Yeah, and law enforcement believe there's more. I think one of the houses that he did work at, they found some, at least DNA, and it was 3 different victims, all scattered through, like, you know, flower, like you said, flower pots and flower beds and things like that. I mean, this guy is beyond sick.
Well, from my understanding is this, that they recovered body parts, or they recovered, better to say, the remains of 7 individuals. My understanding is that they have identified 6 of these 7, that we still have 1 male victim that remains unidentified to this day.
Yeah, they actually took a picture and gave this to the people of Canada to try to help out with.
Well, that is a good topic to discuss, because we don't know that that is in fact the case. So what we do know regarding this photograph, there was a photograph, like the captain said, released to the public in hopes that people could identify the man in the photo.
Yeah.
Police have stated that the man in the photo is believed to be deceased.
Right.
Now, where I call into question that is, we don't have anybody saying that the photo belongs to the unidentified remains that we have found. So where we have a situation where we've recovered the remains of 7 individuals, and we now have a photo of a man that we're trying to identify.
Yeah.
The reason why I say that we don't know that the photo is of the unidentified remains is because police have stated that photo was taken from MacArthur's computer, and that they took that photo and they had to clean it up a little bit. They right. photoshopped it to take out quote unquote artifacts that would have been seen inside that photo. And the police really didn't want to release this to the public. However, it was like a last resort. We have to identify this man. And so the big question here with Bruce MacArthur is, ultimately, how many people do they think that he has killed? How big could this number go? Right. And the reason being is you have an individual that he remained under the radar for so long. He had victims that were missing.
And if he's putting their remains in flower pots, then you got to hope that somewhere you can find a list of clients. And you're talking about years of working as a landscaper that you have to then go back and check all those properties.
Mm-hmm. He's a sophisticated, organized killer. Is what he would be classified as when people would be investigating this as far as the FBI is concerned.
Yeah, a.k.a. piece of shit.
The thing, so how far back can we trace this thing? How high could these numbers go? I'm hoping, my suspicion is that the photo is not of the unidentified remains, that they're not one and the same.
Mm-hmm.
My suspicion is we're probably looking at 8 murdered victims here. We will only find this out as the court proceedings continue. And, you know, we're here recording these episodes on the 13th. I believe Bruce MacArthur is scheduled to be back in court either on the 14th or the 15th.
Yeah, I think, like we said, based off what information they had, and they were running surveillance on this guy for a while, so they were collecting evidence as they're doing that, then you basically catching him in the act, and then on top of that you have all these other survivors coming out, and they're giving you information and evidence, and then you have this computer evidence, and what else, other evidence do they find that we're not going to know about until the trial? I mean, this guy, it seems like a pretty open and shut case.
Yeah, I think we're looking at a very strong guilty conviction here. The police have taken some scrutiny because the gay community around Toronto has said that Bruce MacArthur has been interviewed years ago regarding some of these disappearances. And the gay community have said that it's one of the best, quote unquote, best kept secrets. Now, I don't know about that. And you know what? Here's the thing. He is so tied to a couple of these victims. It's very likely that he was, in fact, interviewed. I don't know where police slipped up. It's hard for me to say that they did. What I see here on the outside looking in is I do see some victims that were living somewhat secretive lives, which makes any investigation
a little bit harder,
difficult.
Yeah. If you're having relationships with different men and you're married, that you know, to a woman that, you might not want that information out. And so then there's probably times that victims could have came forward to give them more information, or when they were questioned, they could have been more truthful from the beginning. And maybe that would have stopped this. But this guy was a cold, calculated killer. So, I don't want to throw them under the bus, law enforcement.
I agree. And from the outside looking in, Captain, I applaud their efforts from late last year up until the present. Before that, I don't know much about the investigation to make a determination or shame anybody either way.
Well, I don't know this for certain, but I think the gay community has a right to say, look, you know, as far as our community goes, they're at more risk. Now, some would say that you're putting yourself at more risk. I mean, you're putting yourself at more risk if you're going home with individuals that you don't know, if you're letting individuals tie you up, or if you're letting individuals handcuff you, if you're letting individuals drug you, this puts you at higher risk. But I do side with the idea that a lot of times homosexual communities are not protected as much as heterosexual communities.
Well, the only people I believe deserve any shame in this story as it unfolds is, you know, when doing the research for this case, came across several websites, and I won't name them by name because I didn't actually look at them long enough to care to know their name, but
right.
I'll just refer to this grouping of websites as the haters. And it was, you don't have to use your imagination too much to get where I'm coming from, but it was a lot of victim blaming, a lot of people saying, see what they get for this, that, and the other thing.
Right.
You know, serves them right sort of thing. Look, we are on what, episode 190, 191, something like that. We've talked about victims from every walk of life. Nobody, regardless of who they are, any regular citizen that's not walking around harming anybody or infringing on anybody else's rights,
right,
deserves to be victimized in any form or fashion, whether it be theft, rape, murder, nothing like that. The things that happen to these individuals are horrible. They're unspeakable acts that were committed by a monster.
This episode of True Crime Garage is brought to you by Unsane. It's a new movie. It's a new psychological thriller from the director Steven Soderbergh. And it's starring Claire Foy. Involuntarily committed to a mental institution, a woman must confront her greatest fear. But is it all in her head? This movie is written by Jonathan Bernstein and James Greer. Check out Unsane in theaters March 23rd. And make sure you check out juicebeauty.com/garage. You know, your skin can absorb up to 60% of what you put on it. So what goes on your skin can be as important as what goes in your body. Juice Beauty is a skincare and makeup line that is made with certified organic ingredients. Go to juicebeauty.com/garage. And for exclusive savings on your first order, use our promo code Garage20 at checkout.
First off, I want to thank all the listeners for suggesting this case as early as the middle of last year. Thank you for being aware. Thank you for bringing it to our attention.
We do listen to you.
That's right.
We listen to you.
This weekend is St. Patrick's Day. Everybody enjoy the basketball games. Everybody enjoy some time with friends and family. Toast a drink.
Yeah, but look, we talked a lot about these dating apps, and any listener out there that is using one to meet people, that's a great thing, right? Build a relationship, whatever. But when you're going to meet somebody from these apps, make sure you send a friend some information of the person, or send a picture of the person. So then if your friend goes missing, or if you went missing, that your friends would have information to give to law enforcement.
Take precautions.
Don't be stupid.
That's right. Right. All right, and until next time, everybody, be good, be kind, don't litter.